Hello, and welcome to the Business Decisions Podcast. My name is Stuart Wood, and I'm the CEO of Caravel Law. Every week, we bring you stories and insights from founders, owners, and leaders of great businesses, followed by some thoughts and input from one of Caravel's lawyers. Caravel Law has been a leader in legal innovation in Canada since 2004 and has helped many startups and small businesses overcome challenges as they have scaled and succeeded. Our hope is that these discussions will help existing business leaders and inspire others to start their own ventures. Now, let's get to today's guest. Today on the podcast, I'm delighted to be joined by Dwayne Wright, an incredibly talented producer, songwriter, and musician who has built a very cool and very successful business. I think you'll really enjoy this conversation. Dwayne is clearly passionate about music and technology. He's very thoughtful about his work and about helping artists and anyone trying to build a career in music or sound production. We also get to hear him in action as he creates a new track live on the podcast, which he has been kind enough to send to us, and you can hear at the end of this podcast. Following that conversation, I speak with Alex Stack, an intellectual property lawyer with Caravel Law, and we talk through some of the IP issues that came up during my conversation with Dwayne. I was really happy to have them both on the podcast, and here's my interview with Dwayne Wright.
We're here with Dwayne Wright from Alumni & Company.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you doing today?
I'm great. This is a very cool space you're in.
Thank you. This is Astrolab Studios. It's, you know, I don't even know how many square feet. So it has to be like 9,000 square feet. It's huge. You got two studios used for film, television, and photography. And then we have, here we are in the audio suite.
Imagine this must be a really inspiring place to come every day.
Yeah, it's great. Great atmosphere, great owner. We come in here and we make magic.
That's great.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about Alumni & Company.
So it's a company where we combined three of my friends. We came together and we're like, let's just call combine all of our musical talents. I have Nyx, who is like amazingly talented in writing grants and artist management. I have Belle, who is an amazing songwriter and performer herself. The last thing she did was she was background singing for Daniel Caesar.
Oh, cool.
So she keeps busy and also teaches as well. She is a graduate, like full on classical piano, like no one's business, yeah. And a great producer herself. And then we have me, producer, engineer, and songwriter.
Oh, that's amazing. And you have quite the setup.
Yeah. So for the people who can't see, as it's audio, yeah. We're in front of a 40-inch television, 4K. No, not 40-inch. I mean, 4K, but it's 60-inch.
Yeah.
This 27-inch screen with a full surround sound setup, plugged into an Apollo 8. Google it. You'll love it.
Yeah.
It's what's recording us right now. And then I have my MacBook Pro and stuff and some keyboards. We have guitars around. There's an electric guitar right behind you. Couches and stuff. It's really comfortable with acoustically treated space.
Yeah. What do you do in here?
So I come in here and I make music for television, film, artists, video games. We record podcasts. We do commercials.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
And who are your clients?
You know, I always stay quiet for about my clients, but I can. I've been
allowed. What types of companies hire you?
We'll say
or individuals.
Individuals? Well, record labels, brands, television shows, showrunners, directors come to do stuff. They're usually sitting beside me and we're going through whatever it is that they do. Who else has come through here? Our musicians, a lot of musicians come through, some singers as well. We recorded them. We had a great sitar player the other day to fill out a score for television. He blew my mind away.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And how do your clients find you or how do you find them?
It's a combination of me stalking people online, which is always fun, and word of mouth. I have a really extensive friend network where three of us decided, hey, let's all go to New York and try to make our dreams happen.
Yeah.
And we're all very persistent and we all got some level of success and we just, you know, stayed together and would feed through each other. If someone needed something, like, hey, I need some drums. And I know you do that well, Dwayne. So I would do drums. And if someone needed, like, I needed like a vocal rift or some sort of piano playing. I'm a player, but I'm like, yeah, best. I'd ask one of my friends to do it, and we just kept each other in the loop, and they've retired. Mm-hmm. They cashed out. Yeah. I'm still going.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's how that happens.
How long have you been doing it?
Oh, man. Full time, I've been doing it for the last 10 years. And then I took about a 5-year break because there was a lot of traveling involved before that. and I want to start a family and all that good stuff.
Yeah.
And I did. Yay. Two kids. Hi, kids. If you're listening to this in the future, because we're too young right now. And then before that, it was 5 years before. So five on, five part-time, and then 10 full-on again.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
And so when an artist comes to see you, what are they usually looking for?
It depends on like the level of artist. The independent, just starting out, wants to, I have a whole bunch of songs, let me make something.
Yeah.
Some can play instruments, which is great, because then it's like, oh, my job's easy. It just, you know, I can build on whatever you have. Some are like humming it, and then I'm like, okay, we'll just, I'll play what you're humming. And you're like, oh, wow, that's really easy. No, it's not. It took a long time to get there. And professional artists like a Rihanna, amazing work ethic, will come in. There's already a song for her. She just, here's the music, here's the thing, add, yeah, change this, do this, I'm going to sing, I'm out, bye, tell me when it's done. And yeah, it's great.
And so do you come up with the beats yourself?
Yeah, off the top of my head, beats myself. Sometimes I get inspiration from a set of music, but the lawyer said to say out loud, anything that I do is not a derivative work or copy.
Right.
It is an interpretation solely through my lens.
There you go.
Right?
Inspiration,
yeah,
that's all.
Even here, yeah, you're happy about that. Just inspiration, like, yeah, a certain style or a genre. You want to pay homage to it, but not in a way that takes away from the originals, where people are like, hey, that's the same song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when you do that, does the beat then transfer from you to someone else owns it from that point forward?
So again, with the levels, it depends on the person. There's usually like the beginner, you will usually lease.
Yeah.
They get like rights to it to use, to perform,
yeah,
for a certain amount of plays. And if it happens to do really, really well, then it kicks into something else where I get more money. And then, yeah, for labels, there's two. I usually don't lease or full out sell my masters to them.
Okay.
I get either percentage of points, they call it, of the song itself as a whole. I'm a songwriter as well, so I usually contribute on that end. So I get either production, mechanical, or songwriting credit,
yeah,
or I will do somewhat of, it's not a leasing situation itself, it's not mechanical, it's the only the music itself that I'll retain ownership to,
yeah,
and then they have unlimited use of it. That's an exclusive deal with them.
And is it, in your experience, a high integrity business where these deals are honored?
Well, I'm still in the business, so I have no one to throw on the bus right now, but yeah, people have been over the years slow to pay or will do some interesting acrobatics to do the mathematics because there's an advance involved most of the time.
Yeah.
And it will be paid out after, sorry, you get an advance and then you have your royalties,
yeah,
and your royalties will be paid out after they make back the money they made on the advance.
Yeah.
But you think, oh yeah, they're going to just sell. And they're like, no, but we had these expenses and then we had the marketing and then all the stuff. All that other stuff has to get paid first. Yeah. And then we were going to pay. So all those sales didn't count to this. And then it's like, okay, so what are we talking about? Like a year, two? They're like, oh, probably like 4 or 5 years. So it's fine. Goodness. Yeah.
Do you have situations where they might take something that was your idea,
right,
and that gets reimagined? And suddenly you hear it and you're thinking, wait a minute, that sounds an awful lot.
I haven't been on the receiving end of that,
yeah,
but I have had to do stuff like that where an artist didn't, something fell through with either a label or another producer,
yeah,
but they really love the song. But I fight to make it within the same key, but not do that work as well, because the producer community is pretty small.
Yeah.
Even with today, with the internet, like those who do it at a high level are, like, we know each other. It's just, you know, I'm more of a producer's producer, where I like to stay behind the scenes and, you know, help them do it and them get the fame, because I like walking down to the Eaton Center without being harassed.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to upset people, you know, and still having friendships and stuff. It's a business, there's competition, but in the end, I'd rather have that integrity and relationship with people.
The reputation carries a lot.
Yeah, it really, yeah, does. And it's pretty much what sustained me for all of these years, is my reputation and that I'm about to work. I'm not a smoker. I've never done it in my life. I don't drink. I just, you know, I get in, I make music, and I'm like, all right, thanks. Here's all the information you have to pay me. in the long life.
And so one question, how do you know that beat you've come up with hasn't been used before in the entire universe of music out there?
It has happened,
yeah.
Unfortunately, just a couple of chord changes. Thankfully, the way that the law works, even though that Katy Perry case may have changed something,
yeah,
chords cannot be copyrighted. It's just, they're out there. It's some of the melodic tones. Like, I've accidentally done a melody that was a little similar. I didn't get in trouble for it. They caught it before it got out.
Yeah.
I've known others to have to deal with that. And then they go and they talk to the person who originally did it. If it's under the stable of the label, they'll take care of it.
Yeah.
They're just like, yeah, that's one of our songs. We'll do it. If it's another label, then you're looking at a percentage. And depending on how nice they feel, it's either you're paying thousands of dollars, $2,000, $3,000, and it's one time. Sometimes you have to give up a percentage. Mm-hmm. There are law firms out there that just own catalogs of music and will come after you if you use one snare, one kick.
Yeah.
And I want $10,000. Like, not even a joke.
Wow. In terms of the agreements that you set with people, how much of it is sort of standardized in the industry versus negotiated each time?
I try to, again, this at levels, depending on what the artist, like if it's a brand new artist, I'd like to be flexible and just get points because I don't know how successful the song is going to be, but I believe in them.
Yeah.
Of the standardization, usually the bigger artists, like they know, you know, exactly what you're getting into. That's like super standard. Like I've seen the same contract, just like names changed a couple of times. And that's because I already have those relationships. If someone, like I'm chasing down an artist by the name of Baby Rose right now, and if I happen to get to her, we're going to have to like find something, because she's not signed to a label, she's signed to a distribution company, and that seems to be the thing now, that they're going in, not for the label because they're like a bank and they don't want to pay back that loan,
mm-hmm.
but distribution is just like, oh, I make the music, I own my master recordings, and you guys put it out there and we share the profits, because streaming has kind of changed the game on that.
Yeah. Has that been one of the most challenging things about building this business?
Streaming?
No, or just how often the industry is changing.
I relish the change. I really like it. I came up in a time where I was bringing my laptop to studios and they didn't have an aux cord. And they were laughing at me that I was doing things all on the computer. Like, oh, you can't make a full mix or whatever. I'm like, just listen to this. And then, you know, artists would come in because they're always about the new thing. They know. They'd be like, you made that beat in like, what, 5 minutes with a computer? I'm like, yeah. They're like, all right, we're gonna take care of you. It just depends on what end of the spectrum of like the established or the new up and coming. Challenges really now is just staying relevant artistically. I'm always changing that way. I find that challenging because I don't want to get too set in my ways. I'm always trying to do new things or absorb sounds. I'm always just listening to top 200, 300 playlists of like what's out and what's going on. You gotta have an ear for it. And then I choose days where I exclusively listen to new things that aren't on anybody's radar that I just love.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
And so what kind of challenges have you run into building the business?
Oh my goodness. From, you know, people don't pay on time. That's fine. Shout out to FreshBooks, who've hooked me up for the last 10 years. With an account and then getting people to pay it, it's changed my life.
There you go.
What I was chasing down, oh, percentage-wise, like I said, they'll do some creative accounting. I've had to send lawyers after that one, like, hey, that's, you know, you can't do that. What else? What else has gone awry? Nothing's really falling apart. So I got to a point where I have enough in the bank where if I don't want to work on something, I don't have to. I'll just, thanks for having me. I'm going to part my ways. And I usually have an exit out of a contract if things aren't going well. Like,
yeah.
They'll pay me, you know, 30 or 40 upfront percentage wise. And then I'm off to do my next thing.
So you haven't had too many bad experiences along the way?
No, I've been fortunate enough to have really good mentors and I've watched them go through a lot of it.
Yeah.
From, you know, contracts not being fulfilled to people not showing up on time consistently to wrong pay amounts to people straight up just stealing their stuff. Also a problem when I was in Miami, outside of the Hit Factory, there were vans that would just jump onto the studio's Wi-Fi and take music off of people's hard drives.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, like a lot of albums between 2001 to 2007. Just stolen that way. Just these fans, like, they invested some real money into this. I'm also into tech, so it was easily 20K of equipment outside, just parking a white van. There's nothing you can do about it.
Just to grab
them. Just to grab people who didn't secure their laptops or computers properly. Hmm. Yeah. Good on them.
How do you think about how your music is shared online?
I tend not to dive too deeply in that because it is really sad with the way that music, the profits are being shared. It's quite upsetting. I feel for really artists on that front, they take more of the brunt of that. Labels tend to pay the people making the music because for them, it's like, okay, you can only find so many people can do music, but there's so many more people that do singing. So we'll just, you know, cycle through or make money for other ways. They're signing artists into 360 deals that cover everything from their tour to merchandise. So they're going to make their money anyways. Other than that, the technology itself is impressive. I'm glad that it's out there because it has changed the way that people take in music and decide what genre is. Old Town Road right now being the best example of that. It's just mash of different musical styles. And I don't think that would exist without streaming and previous to that, the iPod generation where you just threw all your music onto one thing and listened to it nonstop.
Yeah. Do you get a lot of people wanting to get involved in this business?
Oh, yeah. I do a couple of talks, also part of InstaFest, which is happening at Ryerson this year. Hopefully be part of that again. I'm showing off FL Studio, which is the software I use to produce. That easily has, just that one event, 10, 15,000 people just come in to Ryerson, fill up a hall, and just like talk to you about stuff. And then the questions, you know, how'd you get started? How'd you do? How do you know a beat to finish? How do you want? So I field all questions. You can even get me on Twitter or Instagram. I always say people text me. It's sound writes with a W pro, all one word. And ask me a question about anything. I'm really down for it.
Yeah. Where do you want to take the business going forward?
World domination. No. I want to build it to something. I've had this dream of building in the city itself. Unfortunately, the community wasn't really established when I started here in terms of hip hop and R&B, what I really love doing. So most of my time was in New York, Atlanta, Miami. And that's what I'm doing here now. Drake really facilitated people looking at the city. I walk into the studio and I'm like, where are you from? Toronto. Oh, have a seat over here, sir. Yeah. So I really want to build somebody here. And I'm literally going to be listening to people on next Friday with a listening session with a bunch of people that potentially could be what the next thing for me is going to be for like 4 months.
Oh, that's great. And so if someone is interested in working with you, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
Again, the Twitter, also Instagram. I use Instagram solely for texting. I don't have zero pictures. I have one story, which I'm probably going to delete in a week. Yeah. That was just done because people were like, I was wanted to be part of something. And every so often I'd meet someone outside of my circle and they're like, so where do I find your stuff? And I don't put anything out. You found some like old stuff. Anyone who Googles me will find like when I was just starting. Yeah. So if Instagram, the Twitter, it's just SoundRightPro, soundrightpro.com, which also goes to my Twitter. Just, you know, tweet or at me.
It's a really cool business.
Thank you.
Do you want to give people an audio demonstration of?
Yeah, I would love to. Let me just roll over here. I'm rolling in front of the computer. All right. Okay. So hopefully this is loud enough. I'm going to just do a quick play here. So I started with that. I recorded it off my phone. And then I added some drums. You know, some hats. They go fast. I also have some other hats underneath going like, get a little bounce to it. Turn that up a little. And then, you know, a bit of some kicks and some snares. And then, you know, filter you back out. And then I put in like an 808. I don't know of how impressive that is on this microphone.
We'll see how it turns out. Yeah,
but I will send that to you so you can embed that in there, a little better.
There you go. Well, thanks very much for your time today, Dwayne.
You're very welcome.
Really
Stuart.
Appreciate it. It was great to talk to you.
Nice talking to you as well.
All right. I really enjoyed that conversation with Dwayne from Alumni and Company. I'm going to bring on Alex Stack to talk about a couple of the intellectual property issues that we discussed with Dwayne. Before I do that, I wanted to mention that Dwayne was recording a new song live during the recording of the podcast, and he has been kind enough to send that file along to us. So as a special bonus, after Alex's discussion with me, you will get to hear the track called In My Window that Dwayne sent along to us. So stick around to the end of the podcast to listen to that. Now here's my conversation with Alex Stack of Caravel Law. Now we're in the Caravel Law office with Alex Stack from our intellectual property practice. Alex, tell us a little bit about your practice.
I've been practicing intellectual property and commercial lawyer for about 20 years. The core of my practice is focused on intellectual property, and I cover all sorts of intellectual property from patents and trademarks through to copyrights, industrial designs, advising people on trade secrets and confidentiality. And my practice also ranges from sort of what you might call hardcore intellectual property, which is helping my clients obtain protection for things like patents and trademarks, through to strategic advice on how to build companies and use these assets and build them so that the company makes money, hopefully, off them. And then the other part of my practice is commercial agreements and contracts, essentially, which center on intellectual property.
Great. Well, we just heard from Dwayne Wright of Alumni and Company about his really cool business. And one of the things that we talked about was the difficulty in protecting creative work. So what are some of the challenges for artists, you know, people who make their money from their ideas or their creative output, in getting protection for that work?
Yeah, it's interesting from a perspective of an IP lawyer when you talk about protection for, you know, things in the music industry or, say, the more artistic. I don't want to use the word creative because, of course, computer guys and research guys are creative too. But, you know, from the more musical and artistic side, because in some ways it's easier in the sense that you don't have to go and register intellectual property. Your patents and trademarks, you have to go to the office, try to register it, and in fact, sometimes you end up arguing with the government official about whether or not you're entitled to that right. Copyright is different. For creative works that are covered by copyright, as soon as you provide some sort of fixation, which is some sort of an objective evidence that you actually have the thing, and as long as you invest sufficient skill and judgment into it, then copyright is actually automatic. So from that point of view, it's actually easier. But on the other hand, it's also more difficult in some ways. One is that if somebody is actually infringing on or using your intellectual property without permission and copyright area, the first thing is it can be very difficult to tell. Because it, unlike, say, forms of physical property, if someone takes your intellectual property, you don't know that unless you happen to run across it. And then the second thing, which is common for a lot of areas of law, is that if you want to enforce your rights, that ultimately relies on going to court. And going to court is expensive. And so that's actually often the other big problem, which I see, especially when I'm advising smaller type companies, is that I can sit here and we can describe various rights that they theoretically have, but unless they're willing to court to, going to go to court to do something about it, which they really can't afford to do, those rights are fairly meaningless unless the other side is willing to respect them. So that's actually the other thing where I see is sort of the biggest problem actually a lot of people in the creative community have.
So as soon as Dwayne creates a new song and records it, he automatically has copyright on that song.
That's right. And in that case, depending on what he's doing, it would be copyright on the music itself. He could actually have a separate copyright in the lyrics if he has lyrics separate from the music itself. But yes, as long as he puts sufficient skill and judgment into it, in other words, he's not just copying somebody else's song, then he should have a copyright in the things where he has added the skill and judgment into the song.
Yep. Now, he mentioned that his industry is tight-knit and everybody knows everybody. And so he really takes a great deal of care in making sure that he doesn't steal the ideas from someone else. How do you protect yourself against inadvertently copying someone else's work?
Inadvertent copying, well, it's very hard to prove against inadvertent copying because, legally speaking, the standard is to have you copied a substantial amount of somebody else's work into whatever it is you're doing now. But, of course, it's very rare in a real situation for someone to actually have physically sat there and observed you copy. So the way the courts usually do it is they are willing to infer that copying occurred as long as there is access to the original copyrighted work, and as long as there is enough similarity between the two works themselves. And so in the music industry especially, it can be difficult in the sense that if a song is popular, then the access question is automatic. And of course, everyone's heard of this famous song or that famous song. And then beyond that, there's the question of this level of similarity. And it's inadvertent copying. I mean, of course, that means the person is not deliberately doing it. And there have been even famous cases where, you know, very, very famous artists have finished recording a song, their album is ready to be released, and then the actual songwriters, the people who wrote the song that's on the album in the first place, they're actually thinking to themselves, saying, actually, this song that I wrote actually sounds an awful lot like that person's song. So they actually go back and retroactively and negotiate to give that other person songwriting credits. So it's a very difficult thing to do. The biggest advice which I have from that point of view is actually the same advice that applies in terms of proving that you actually have a copyright in whatever it is you created in the first place. And that's basically to make records. Not records in terms of the things that go on the turntable, but, you know, something that you can prove what you did and when. And so if you have something where you write down this particular music, you know, melody line or beat or lyrics or the combination of them, record it in some manner, whether it's writing down on, you know, the paper or recording it literally. And then whenever you make a significant modification, make a record or make evidence, I suppose, of that as well. And that has two things. One is that if you are showing your own creative process, and showing how you make all these various steps that you got to the end product, the first thing that does is it helps you prove that you're the person who put in skill and judgment in order to create this music at the end of the day, or whatever the art is. But the other thing is it also provides at least some evidence that you didn't copy it from anybody. And you can say, well, I didn't copy it. In fact, it took me 10 steps to get there. Here are my 10 steps. I can document when they occurred. And in fact, I have recordings of them. That's sort of the best evidence that you can have against it. Now, it's not perfect because, you know, the logic of inadvertent copying is that you kind of copied it in your head without thinking about it, you know, which at some point can't be defeated no matter how much evidence you have.
So it goes back to grade school math. Show your work.
Essentially, yes. you know, it sounds a bit silly, but of course, a lot of law, and especially a lot of litigation, if you're talking about ultimately going to court, that's really all it boils down to.
Perfect. Well, thank you very much for your time, Alex. That's a lot of helpful information for people.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. I want to thank my two guests on today's podcast, Dwayne Wright of Alumni & Company and Alex Stack of Caravel Law. If you'd like more information about Caravel Law, please check us out at caravellaw.com. Now, as promised, stick around for the special track sent over to us by Dwayne Wright that was recorded live on our podcast. We'll be back next week with episode 3. Until then, we hope all of your business decisions are great ones.